Hey everyone, it's Brian with Wildcat Radio, and it is springtime, which means that it's a little bit slow right now. So what we wanted to do was add the 12-pack radio show to the Wildcat Radio feed. Rob Bowron and I have been cranking through spring football for the Pac-12, but also for some other conferences too, just a little bit, mostly focused on the Pac-12. And we've been doing our spring questions where we're going through each Pac-12 team, asking questions that we want to look for when it comes to spring. And this week we did USC and we did Arizona. So we talked a little bit about the spring game, celebrated Rob Gronkowski, but really wanted to add this show on a weekly basis, particularly in the off season, to give you a little bit extra information and just something else to listen to while we kind of slog through what will be an offseason before football starts. So I hope you enjoy it. We'll continue to do this weekly. We're going to the Pac-12 North in the coming weeks, so stay tuned for that, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Oh, South Kakalaka! Don't you dare be sour! Clap for your world-famous two-time champs and feel the power! It's a new day. Yes, it is.
For 12-pack radio. Get excited, y'all.
Welcome back, everyone, to 12-Pack Radio, your podcast source for Pac-12 football news, the home of the Baderink College Football Statistical Model, and your home for Pac-12 gambling advice with William Hill's Max Meyer. This is Brian Conger. Thank you for joining us. We are in the midst of our spring questions. We're asking so many questions. We're just asking questions, Rob. With conspiracy theories aside, we're just throwing it out there, throwing it out to the wind. Today, we're going to ask questions about USC and Arizona, and there's good, just a spoiler alert, there's one big question for both teams we're going to be asking. Thank you for joining us. You can follow the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. You can follow us on 12-Pack Radio. SharpCollegeFootball.com is our website. And as always, I'm joined by Mr. Rob Bowron. And Rob, we haven't had a lot of reviews in a while. And please don't make us read reviews over the radio. That's like the worst possible thing. I do not want to do that. So just write a review and give us like some stars and stuff. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Yeah. No pledge drives. Like let's avoid that.
It's like, so there are two podcasts I listen to and all they do for the first 15 minutes is just read reviews. And I want to shoot myself. So we want to get straight to the action. And today, Rob, we're talking USC football and we're talking Arizona football. Let's talk with USC. I have the full depth chart here and I want to give another shout out as always. It's like the third annual shout out to our friends at Reign of Troy. They have this down. If you want to know about USC football and depth charts and where people are projecting in the spring game, Reign of Troy Radio, reignoftroy.com. I'm sure we'll have Michael or Alicia on at some point, but just really, really good stuff. And we were able just to really dig through a lot of really good content in terms of how USC is structured this season. They have some new coaches, Rob. They have a new offensive line coach, which is exciting. What do you think about USC? They seem to be the favorite as always headed into the South, but Baderink kind of has them clumped with about three other teams.
Yeah, I mean the trouble with the Trojans, of course, is the on the field performance, right? I mean. Last season, they finished at number 24 overall in beta rank. I mean, offense finishes at number 24. That's actually a step back from where they were the year before. Number 32 on defense, you know, and that's some improvement, in the first year under Orlando. But they just, it's tough to buy. And I say this, I like some of the changes that Clay Helton has made. I thought special teams were better with Snyder there. I think recruiting has picked up with Dante Williams in the fold. But that said, it still feels like that they struggle to capitalize on the talent that they have on their roster. And it feels like, we were talking a little bit about, the scheme show we had, last season. USC really struggles to get their best players on the field sometimes. And it feels almost as if they're committed to doing things a certain way rather than scoring points. Like they're trying to win style points instead of scoring actual points.
It's so bizarre because obviously they returned Keaton Slovis and he had a decent year. I think anybody that watched USC football, USC fans included, would say that he didn't make the jump that we were anticipating from his freshman to his sophomore year. But still, even so, 17 touchdowns, 17 interceptions, 67% completion rate. So it's not like, you know, I think that there's room to grow there for him and for the program. But like you're mentioning, the biggest question is like on-field performance and scheme. And there's the biggest, giantest, most large looming question is this offensive line. Because throughout the last 5 years, Rob, and it's been funny because sometimes it's been they're going out and they're recruiting 5-star and 4-star kids and they don't put it together. The last couple of years, I'm not certain if this is just Clay Helton's spin because he wasn't able to recruit at the high level on the offensive line. But, you know, their narrative was we're going to go out and we're going to find 3-star guys that we can just put together as a unit, which would make me argue, well, why don't you just get 4- and 5-star guys and make them a unit? Like, I don't understand the difference there. But you know, that's what they were saying. And the offensive line still stinks. And as we are looking into the reports coming out of spring camp, and fortunately USC has been pretty open with their access, the biggest question throughout has been, yikes, this offensive line is kind of a mess. And Elijah Vera Tucker, who went to the NFL, has left. And can they put it together? And then in the spring game, they were just a total disaster. Now, granted, you know, Helton mixed up the offensive line, so the ones and twos were playing together. But still, like, that just shows me that there's no depth on the line or depth that has been produced. And if Slovis is running around for his life and they can't run again, right? Isn't this the same thing that we saw last year?
Yeah, absolutely. And they, you know, it's interesting because Pro Football Focus had this offensive line graded out at 20 overall, but most of that was Vera Tucker. I mean, they really liked him. He said he had an excellent, you know, the best Power 5 pass blocking grade that they handed out last season. But I think that this line has continued to struggle. And I don't think it's players. I think it's been coaching, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, they graded out. And I want to be like USC. I think a lot of fans, when they say like, oh, USC doesn't run the ball well, they say, oh, it's because they're an air raid team. Well, I mean, Lincoln Riley runs pretty much air raid passing concepts. Bill Bedenbaugh, his offensive line coach, has been around air raid coaches his entire career. He's one of the best offensive line coaches in the country. Oklahoma runs the ball really well. Yeah. I mean, and they've introduced, you know, like zone, I mean, some zone power type stuff where they're still running a zone blocking scheme, but they're running some counter. You know, you'll see Oklahoma even run QB counter, which is a lot of fun. But USC just seems stuck in the mud, and a lot of it, I still think, comes back to coaching. I mean, they run the ball quite a bit. It isn't a lack of trying to run the football for USC. It is just a real lack of success running the football for USC. I mean, they're 106 in effective rush this last season. You know, number 8 in effective pass. They were at number 109 in effective rush the season before. Number 4 in effective pass. I mean, at this point, really, USC is, it feels like they're running the ball to try to make a point, right? Like, I mean, and really when you're that successful at throwing the ball, to continue to run the ball at that clip, it's just criminal.
That 109 number that you mentioned, it sounds like, you know, the 4 in effective pass, 109 in effective rush. That sounds like a Washington State Mike Leach offense. And this is not a Washington State Mike Leach offense.
Yeah, they don't have that kind of split.
They run so much. And, you know, it'll be interesting this year to see whether the running game can figure it out. And whether I think I would put this more on the offensive line than the running backs, but we'll see. And I think this year we will definitely know because Keontae Ingram comes from Texas. He's somebody that has a tremendous amount of talent. He just got pushed out by Bijan Robinson. Stephen Carr should be healthy this year, finally. So it'll be exciting to see if he is really that 5-star, like, explosive person that USC was getting when he was healthy. Keaton Kristen isn't being talked about, and he's really fun. Vivian Malapai, like, comes back. So, I mean, they have 4 really solid options. But I have a hunch that they're going to keep trying to run the ball and just they're not going to be able to get the holes. I don't know. Like that is obviously the biggest question. I don't know. Anything else to say about the running game and just the quarterback? Oh, one thing to mention, too, is Jackson Dart was their kind of key quarterback that came in from this past class along with Miller Moss. It looks like Dart might be the truth in a couple of years. Alicia and Michael were really excited about him. It just seems like he has a lot of presence. But really, this is going to be the Keaton Slovis show this year. Just hoping that he's going to have some co-stars in the running game. But anything else on the line in the running backs? Because the wide receivers, holy Moses, I think they're going to be pretty solid this year.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to, like, Slovis, you know, both appear to be, I think he was injured last season. I have to, like, refresh my memory. But, you know, like, you remember in the Arizona and Arizona State games, like, he looked like he really wasn't putting enough zip on the ball, you know, when he was going in. And with Slovis, I mean, and the line, you know, often having the struggles that they've had, you know, like, I would not in any way, like, put money that Slovis plays in every game, right? I mean, Dart's more the guy. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see Dart play, you know, because even though they're not doing, like, the Washington State, like, run, you know, run pass blitz, their offensive line has struggled enough in pass pro to make you wonder. And with Vera Tucker moving on, I mean, you know, like, they are going to be breaking in some new faces.
That makes me so sad that you're, like, you're not basing that Jackson Dart will play because he's good enough. You're basing it on, oh, no, like, we're going to have an injury at the QB1 spot, which I hope does not happen. I want
Slovis. No, I mean, I hope so too, right? I mean, but if you're USC, you have to feel better, right? Because, like, the last couple of years, I mean, with the exception of, like, of course, when Slovis came in behind, you know, JT Daniels, who really broke out a little bit at the end for Georgia last season. You know, like, I mean, Matt Fink is fine. You know, I mean, who's the guy that ended up transferring to Boise State of all places?
Oh, yeah, I forget.
Jack Sears. I mean, they're fine, but they weren't really. They didn't work, right? I mean, you know, and Fink had that game where he was basically playing 500 with USC's wide receivers against Utah. If I'm a USC fan, I mean, having a backup quarterback that I'm excited about it is a win.
No, that is true. And he's going to have some interesting pieces to throw to. One of the questions I have for coming out of spring is how good are the wide receivers not named Drake London and Katie Nixon. I think we kind of know what Katie Nixon is. I don't think he's going to blow the doors off at USC. I think he's going to be fine. We know Drake London is a star and really is filling in that tight end position. I mean, like, when we talk about throwing to the tight ends, yeah, they're going to be fielding tight ends out there, but Drake London is just such a big body and has taken over. You know, 500 yards last year, 15 yards per catch. He had 3 touchdowns. He'll be out there. And this kind of reminds me of, like, the offensive side of the secondary a few years ago, Rob, when they had a bunch of 4 and 5 star guys out there and you just didn't know whether or not they were going to put it together. You know, they bring Kyle Ford, the number 6 wide receiver of 2019. He's going to be out on the field. He previously had torn his ACL. Brew McCoy, the 5-star guy, comes in. And Gary Bryant was in that really god-awful class that Helton brought in. Gary Bryant was, like, the star, you know, the crown jewel. He was a 4-star wide receiver, and it seems like the staff really likes him. Michael Jackson, the 3rd, is there. He could be interesting. It's just whether or not, I mean, I would be more bullish on this than the secondary. I think sometimes in the defense, you really got, I mean, like, wide receiver, it's like, run this route, please. And you're, by the way, you're faster and stronger and better than everybody. So I'm actually really bullish on the wide receiving core, even without Amon-Ra St. Brown, losing Tyler Vons as well. I don't know. What do you think about the wide receivers?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of talent here, and I expect them to have, you know, some pretty good. I mean, where they ran into trouble last season was they often struggled because of where they were putting St. Brown on the field to get London on the field as much as they really should have, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that they can easily, you know, I should say, like, they should be able to easily correct, you know, and just get their, you know, they get their best wide receivers on the field. I mean, and it may be, I mean, given, I mean, they seem pretty committed to running a lot of 11 personnel in this. I mean, it really may be that USC's best option here is to go, you know, without a tight end and run 4 wide.
Yeah, and their initial tight end that they're going to run out there is more of a blocking tight end. So if they're running him out here, it's for pass protection, and Lord Almighty, they're going to need it. And I think that's also the reason you sent Malapai out there more than the other running backs, was because he could block. Like, I think that's the other thing that he brought to the table, was protecting the quarterback. You know, it was interesting when we think about the wide receiving core a few years ago, or maybe even last year, like last year and the year before that, there didn't seem to be a lot of depth outside the top talent. you know, you had Amon-Ra St. Brown, you had Vaughns, you had Pittman, and then it was kind of like, well, what are they going to do after that? Well, they're going to be USC. That's what they're going to do after that. I think they really did a good job filling the depth in a lot of the holes at the wide receiver position, to the point where I do think that there's just a lot of really interesting pieces here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought Nixon coming in, you know, in addition to what they really already have. And I mean, really, if you're USC, you would, I mean, I think that they've done a good enough job recruiting and developing players at this position. I'm not too worried, about how they're going to be with Vaughns, you know, having moved, you know, Vaughns and St. Brown having moved on. I mean, they have a lot of really talented players and, you know, guys that are, you know, are going to benefit from, you know, like in McCoy's case, you know, like having spent some time, you know, in the system.
Well, here's a question for you. Do you see USC making a step forward on offense over last year? Because, I mean, losing St. Brown and losing Vaughns is a big deal, and they still have a bad offensive line without their starting left tackle. Like, there could be a scenario where this offense kind of puddles around that 25 mark, you know, like a top 25 offense, which is what you do not want to see if you're a USC fan. Do you see them taking a step forward this year? I mean, just given what you've read about so far?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. I mean, they were at number 11 in 2019. You know, I could still see them taking a step forward. I think, you know, Slovis, you know, being healthy and them having a viable option behind him, I think would make a big difference. I do think, you know, their offensive line coaching can't get a lot worse. I was surprised at the hire, because they hired a guy, I mean, an air raid guy, but a guy that had kind of bounced around, you know, the fringes of college football. USC, you'd sort of, I mean, I don't want to say fringe, I mean, Washington State and Texas Tech and some other air raid schools. But if you're USC, you're sort of expecting them to go get somebody that's, you know, an assistant offensive line coach from the pros or something like that. I think that, you know, this offense, if they are able to improve their running, I am not convinced that Graham Harrell is going to walk away from running the ball as often as he does. So they just have to get better at it. But I think their passing game will be stronger potentially with Slovis there. I think there's still too much talent on the field and to cover effectively. And I think Slovis will probably have a pretty good year. And they did appear decent in pass protection, you know, at times last season. I thought Slovis took, even though he seemed kind of injured, I thought he took less heat than he did the year before. So I think they can take a step forward. They really need them to, though, because I mean, I think even if the defense does take a step forward, the South isn't as bad as it has been, right? I mean, it used to be that you could sort of look at USC's schedule and say, all right, like Utah, circle that one, you know, and for the past couple of years, and there wasn't really another outstanding tough game on the South schedule. Now, I mean, it does. I mean, USC, UCLA can play them close. I think ASU can play them close, you know, and Colorado's been improving.
Yeah, one other question I have for them would be, you know, they have the new offensive line coach that comes from offenses that are used to getting the ball out quickly. And now they have Keontae Ingram, who could be a threat out of the backfield. They have Stephen Carr, who could be a threat, you know, catching passes out of the backfield. Are they going to scheme around that if the offensive line is a mess? And I would really like to see that, to just them moving that ball forward, kind of making up for the lack, I mean, frankly, a lack of talent at the offensive line, or a lack of coaching, if that's where you want to put it on. Are they going to be able to do that? So we'll see. And I really hope that they do put it together. But I think maybe secretly some USC fans are hoping that they don't. Because yeah, if Helton doesn't do well this time, I mean, that's got to be it for him, right?
I mean, I think if Helton doesn't, I mean, you're talking about a couple of years removed, really, from them winning the Pac-12. You're still talking about USC not having any playoff. You know, I mean, would you have expected at this point in the college football playoff to have USC never have appeared? I mean, that's kind of shocking.
Yeah.
And I do think that, I mean, they did make some good investments, I think, like I said, to improve the staff. But, you know, with Helton, it's also true. Like, if Cliff Kingsbury doesn't get hired by the Arizona Cardinals, I mean, Clay Helton might be in a totally different place, you know? I mean, you know, he had one of the best play callers in football signed up to be his OC. So I do think he can, I mean, Clay Helton can go out and make a good hire. I just don't know how many more opportunities he's going to have to say, you know, like, we need a new DC. Let's go get one. You just hired one. You need a new offensive coordinator because Harrell's not quite going to get you there. At that point, I would expect USC to go out and potentially make a hire.
Yeah, because that hire could go on and bring on the offensive and defensive coordinator.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you might hire somebody that actually, I mean, like, do what Texas. I mean, like, USC fans obviously wouldn't have wanted Sarkisian, but, you know, like, do what Texas did and go out and hire a guy that's one of the top offensive play callers in the game, and then let him go. I mean, USC fans may not have wanted Steve Sarkisian, but, like, Sarkisian went out and hired Kwiatkowski from Washington. I mean, that's a good mix.
Yeah, I mean, success brings success. And just the dumbest contract buyout ever. Like, who's going to buy out Clay Helton? I mean, just the fact that that's overhanging USC is just the dumbest thing ever. But whatever. Okay, let's get to the defense. Let's do it.
I mean, if Arizona can scratch up the money to, like, fire Kevin Sumlin in the middle of a pandemic, I mean, certainly USC can scratch out the money. I mean, Texas can. If Texas can, so can USC.
Yeah, that's true. I know that there's not a shortage of money in Southern California. That's for certain. All right, let's get to the defense and let's do it right after this.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, we're back. And I have bad news right off the bat. Rob, I was taking a look at the defensive line, and Brandon Peely, the big guy up in the middle, may or may not have he definitely injured his leg, and I think it's an ACL. I have to go back and double check, but it is likely that he could be out for the season, which totally sucks because this line could be really good. Either that or the offensive line is just god awful because from all the reports from camp, it's just that all the defensive linemen from the edges to the middle are just doing really, really well right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, you know, really, you know, like I like some of the talent that they have here. I still have a lot of the same questions we had coming into last year, right? About, you know, in Todd Orlando's system, you know, do they have anybody that can play two gap? Tufele, you know, opted out. He's off to the NFL. He's going to get drafted, you know, in the draft today, you know, this week. Is it this week? It better be this week. I'm so tired of draft Twitter.
Yeah, I know. Yes. The worst.
I don't care. I don't care who you draft. How about that? That's where I'm at. I still think they have some of those questions, right? They need to find somebody that can, you know, really, you know, get down there and you know, eat up some blockers for them for Orlando's system. And that's why, I mean, I don't think that that's, you know, I don't think I'm alone in sort of, you know, asking that and wondering that. I mean, I like, that said, I like their rushing, you know, the talent that they have, you know, to rush the quarterback. You know, it really, I mean, and I would still count, I mean, Drake Jackson's listed as an outside linebacker. He's going to rush the quarterback a lot for Orlando.
Yeah.
you know, it really is like who's going to eat up blocks so the guys can get downhill and get there. They've got some size. I mean, they've got more than a few guys that are above 300 pounds, but Peely was probably the guy that you felt like might be able to step up and do it.
Yeah, they got an Alabama transfer in Ishmael. I think it's Sofscher is how you pronounce his name. So he comes in. They got some interesting, you know, one of the guys that really stands out is Stanley, and I apologize, guys, I'm going to get this, but it's Taofu, I think is how you pronounce his name. He was an inside linebacker recruit that they just beefed up beyond all measure, and he's moved from inside linebacker to interior defensive lineman, which is bonkers. So I'm interested to see if he's going to be able to be a force down there. And they have some other bodies, like you mentioned, behind him. I think the edges are fine, but yeah, same thing that you're saying, Rob. My biggest question is, can they hold the line in the middle? And Peely being out kind of sets them back a little bit. And it's a good thing they went to the transfer market because they have another body down there that comes in with a lot of pedigree. So we'll see if they're able to do that. Because one of the things that was bizarre was a few years ago, it's like, yeah, they had those guys in the middle, but you could still run on USC, which was just it kind of blew my mind to watch that on film.
Yeah, I mean, and they struggled against the run last season. They were graded out at 48 in effective rush and beta rank. They were at 19 in effective pass. I mean, pretty good, and they definitely had some losses on the back end. You know, so I mean, I think they are going to have to fix that. I do think, I mean, getting a new defensive system and a new defensive coordinator, you know, that left a lot of defenses, or, you know, that would leave anybody in a shortened offseason, you know, and especially as quick as the Pac-12 tried to ramp it up, you know, it could leave you in some trouble. So I do think that they will get better, perhaps than they were last season. So, I mean, I think Orlando wasn't a, he wasn't a real headline hire, but I think he's an improvement over what they were doing. And, you know, I expect them to improve a little bit coming into this year. But they're going to have to clean up the run defense. And it still comes back to, like, keep watching USC, look in the middle and see if anybody can play two gap.
Yeah, in addition to that, if you take a look at the backers, right, who's behind the defensive line, the linebackers, I think, is a question, too. You know, you lose Gate Ote, who didn't live up to the hype, but still was a piece that I was hoping could put it together, but he's gone. And so now you have somebody like Raylan Goforth, who was a starter last year, but he wasn't great. He has to fend off like Jordan Iosefa, who's had some injury issues. Solomon T, as I'm going to call him, another guy that's, I think he's married and has but just had major injury issues that came in really hyped. He hasn't really put it together yet. And is he going to be healthy to challenge for that spot? You have Kanaya Munga, who was a regular starter last year and I think was better than Goforth. But still, I don't know. Like, I kind of look at the names and, yeah, there was a lot of stars in all these names, but they didn't look like a five-star linebacking core when you see them on the field.
Yeah, and that one is interesting. I mean, if you would have asked me, I mean, talking about like, oh, if you would have asked me years ago, like yeah. If you'd asked me if that linebacking class, which was like all world that USC signed, you'd be sitting here coming into this season and saying, well, we have some questions. I would have told you were nuts. I would have been sure we would have been talking about USC's all world linebackers. They do have to have the defensive line helping to keep them clean in the system. And they also really have to understand, you know, the run fit. And I think they struggled with that too last season. So, I think they have an opportunity to improve. I mean, there's certainly a ton of talent there. If they're really able to understand Orlando's system and be ready to play this season, they should be playing faster on the field.
How was the pass defense last year, Rob? Because this secondary also is kind of similar to the linebacking core, where there's just a lot of talent on paper that came out of high school. And were they able to put it together the last couple of years?
I mean, they graded out a 19 overall, which is pretty good. Yeah. And then they were at, the year before... the defense the year before was really bad, but the run defense was the worst of the, you know, units, I guess you could say. The pass defense was still pretty effective. Marginally effective, I guess you should say, at 43 versus in the 70s for their run defense in 2019.
Oh, well, that's good. They lose Elijah Griffin, but Chris Steele, Isaac Taylor Stewart, Greg Johnson returns. I don't know. Is this the strength of their defense?
I mean, I would think so. I mean, you definitely, I mean, like we talked, like you like the talent, you know, like you'd like the talent profiles at all the other positions. But I mean, other than Drake Jackson, you know, like these guys at least have experience and have played pretty well. You know, so I like this. I like their secondary to have a pretty good year this year.
Okay. Any other things we should be talking about when it comes to USC? Again, this is kind of just the general overview. I'm sure we'll have a guest on and really take a deep dive as we get closer to the season. But anything else you want to bring up here for USC?
No, I think that covers them.
Okay, let's go from the top team to the bottom team of the Pac-12 South. And let's do it right after this. All right, we're back. And we're talking Arizona football, which I'm sure everyone is so excited about. Because new coaching staff, Jed Fish comes in, Rob, you know, shaking up the offense. He brought in a lot of alums. Man, we were more like, so we got a lot right last year. We also got a lot wrong. And I think this one was really at the top. Neither of us saw how god awful the offensive line was going to be, which is kind of similar to USC. Although I would say obviously USC's offensive line was better than Arizona's, but Arizona also suffered from the same problem where it was just kind of a mess. I mean, Grant Gunnell gets knocked out. There's that, and I wish there was a gif of it where, you know, he breaks his shoulder or whatever and somebody like pats him on the shoulder on the sideline and he just winces in pain. And that was the perfect metaphor for Arizona football that year. What do you think about the chances that Arizona has to at least, you know, move the basement up a floor or two?
You know, I was somewhat, I would say mostly because of Grant Gunnell. High-ish. I still expected him to lose a bunch of games, but I didn't expect that to be as bad as they were. I would also say, I mean, if you look at that team, I mean, they also just quit. I mean, really, I don't know that there's another way to describe. I mean, after the USC game, it just felt like the team quit. You know, sort of like midway through that first half against Washington. And really, by the time you got to the ASU game, I mean, you had opt-outs all over the place. And but I wasn't expecting the offensive line to crater the way that they did. I think that's your main, I mean, real main concern coming into this year. You know, I think if you're in Arizona, I mean, there are concerns all over this team. Yeah. But I think your main concern is still, you know, that one right there, that the offensive line, if they don't improve, I mean, they're returning a lot of guys that have played, you know, over the last two seasons, like Donovan Lai is back, you know, Jordan Morgan, they expect to compete for a tackle spot. You know, Edgar Barola is back off suspension. But there's, you know, you feel like they couldn't have been. Honestly, I think they were among the very worst offensive lines in all of college football last season, not just Power Five.
Oh, they were terrible. And you know, they bring in the new offense coordinator. They bring in Brandon Carroll, Pete Carroll's son, who was an offensive line coach in for the Seahawks. You know, Jed Fish is an offensive mind, but still, you can have a great scheme, but if your line is just a mess, I mean, we saw exactly what happened on that front. You know, that's why you saw Will Plummer play quarterback, because you had the injury to Gunnell early in the season, and Plummer certainly wasn't ready for prime time. We saw that. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, especially in the Pac-12, if a team played Arizona, I mean, that was an automatic win, and it boosted your defense numbers. Like, it was just because it was just awful. Arizona really had some interesting pieces at the running back position, and they still do. But can the line give them holes to run in? I don't know the question there, like whether or not that's going to be the case. They have Michael Wiley. They have Drake Anderson, the Northwestern transfer. They have some other people, Bam Smith, Jalen Johnson behind them. The wide receivers are interesting, but they're not like going to blow you out of the water. I think Jamari Joyner's probably the best of the bunch. They do have some speedy guys in Stanley Berryhill, and I think it's Tavian Cunningham who is also there. But I mean, I guess the other thing too, Rob, is, you know, we might see some two tight end sets a lot, because they're going to need the extra bodies to keep that quarterback on the field. And they switch over from the air raid to more of like a Rams type of offense, which I don't know. Like, I do not have high hopes for this offense. You know, they have the,
I don't think anyone should have high hopes for this offense this season. I mean, Fish as an offensive play caller is good. I mean, he's a good play. I mean, he's a good offensive mind. I mean, you know, he was, before he took that job with the Rams, after he was the offensive coordinator at UCLA, you know, Nick Saban wanted to hire him as the QB coach at Alabama. You know, like Michigan really had their best years throwing the football when he was their passing game coordinator. You know, like I like Fish as a play caller. Whether this set of personnel that he has is going to get him anywhere is another story. And it's going to, like, I do want to call out, like, I mean, the staff I think is a lot better, you know, and this goes back to like two staffs, right? Like I thought the Rich Rod staff really stunk at player development too, but I mean, I think we have to call out like Kevin Cummings, the offensive or the wide receiver coach that they got from San Jose State. I think that was a really good get. I think Arizona's receivers have really struggled in being coached to run routes properly under the last two staffs. You know, I mean, they had a nepotism hire. Mazzoni's kid was the wide receiver coach. They do have a dedicated tight end coach for the first time in a long time. I think, you know, I think on campus. And he's familiar within the Pac-12. Papeo spent some time at Washington. You know, there's, I mean, it's going to, like, I think it will all come down to, I mean, I also, like, it's all going to, in theory, come down to the offensive line. But, like, gosh, they have a lot of questions at quarterback. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, because Plummer didn't show that he was ready for prime time. Gunnar Cruz, you know, the transfer from Washington State. They got Jordan McLeod from Southern Florida. So, it's interesting, but none of those guys, I'm like, hell yeah, Arizona is set at quarterback. And now you have somebody that you're not quite certain is set, plus a bad offensive line and okay wide receivers. And it could be, I mean, the spring game might be the highlight of this Arizona season when Gronkowski's catching 600-yard footballs dropped from a helicopter. That might be the best thing about Arizona this year.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, I mean, Fish made Devin Monster look good when he was, you know, at UCLA. You know, that UCLA offense, he really pulled them out of a ditch from where they ended up. So, I mean, I think from a, you know, scheme and play calling aspect, you know, they should be fine-ish, right, from that. It is really going to be, can the offensive line gel to just not be terrible? And then, I mean, I was a little, like, if there was a big bummer about the transfer portal and Fish, it was that, I mean, I don't know that Cruz, I thought maybe they could have done better than Cruz and McLeod in the transfer portal. McLeod has some accuracy issues in his past. He certainly got some athleticism and Fish could certainly use that. You know, Cruz, he's just, you know, we haven't seen him on the field enough. You know, you certainly do like that, you know, if Mike Leach recruited him, he recruits guys that are accurate. So, you know, if he can get his head around the offense, that can work. Plummer, I mean, I put Plummer and Cruz right together because, like, I mean, Plummer played terribly as a true freshman with almost no camp, right?
Yeah.
Like, so that Plummer was and behind that god awful offensive line. I mean, Cruz and Plummer have had moments in camp, but nobody's really stood out yet. It'll be a full wide open QB competition, you know, for them, you know, in the fall with McLeod showing up too. I guess the question, I might expect, I mean, if somebody's not playing well, you know, like I might expect to see, you know, them get the hook and you know, somebody else come in. You just, if you're an Arizona fan, you're not expecting this team to be particularly good. You'd like to see them, you know, show progress, I think, off of last season.
Oh, absolutely. But if there's one thing that Fish has brought so far, it's at least some attention to Arizona. I mean, that spring game, best spring game ever. Like, Rob Gronkowski throwing water balloons at co-eds. It was just, like, it reminded me. So I went to school in that era, and it reminded me of college at Arizona. I'm like, that, like, why didn't they do that? Or, I mean, like, why didn't they do the hosing, the Gronkowski's catching footballs and spiking? And it's just, like, outlandish. It's hot out there. You know, everybody's showing how the weather is beautiful. So Fish and Leach is giving players a reason to check out Arizona because that is a fun school to go to. And if you are a football player, I'm sure that would be an enjoyable experience. So at least he's showing off all the things that aren't the actual football product to people. So I appreciate that, Rob. Did you have a chance to read any of the stories about that? It was wild.
No, I mean, I think if, I mean, for Fish has, you know, for a program that is literally about as low as you, I mean, other than say Kansas, where you still don't have a head coach. I mean, no one gets lower than the Jayhawks, but you know, it feels all, I mean, I don't think that Fish has the talent on the roster to come in and suddenly pull like a Greg Schiano at Rutgers and suddenly like they're not like, I wouldn't say Rutgers is a very good football team, but they're not terrible. After one season, I think Fish has, you should see versus what you saw last year. It should see like they will still be an extremely bad football team. It'll feel like night and day, I'm sure, versus where they were last year when they basically, I mean, they just quit on Kevin Sumlin and the staff. You know, and I think, you know, and it's not, I mean, it's not like, I mean, you could also say like Michigan quit on Jim Harbaugh last season too. I mean, there were a couple teams that just threw in the towel.
Penn State. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that, you know, Fish can get it going. I think he's done a really good job, more than expecting. And I was trying to talk Arizona fans off the ledge when Fish was hired, because a lot of people were extremely mad that it wasn't an alumni or that it wasn't the coach from San Jose State.
They had one good season, by the way.
Yeah, but I mean, Fish's X and O's are good. I said, you know, if he's able to leverage his connections around football to make good staff hires, then, you know, like you can't ask for any more than that. On top of it, he's done a really good job handling PR. Practices and scrimmages are wide open to the public. You know, former players are flocking back. You know, Rob Gronkowski hadn't been back since he left to be drafted. You know, like there's legitimately for a team that is going to be very bad, there's actual, you know, sort of excitement about what Fish might be building. I would just caution literally everyone who's, you know, who's an Arizona fan to, you know, like this is going to be the, like that old saying of like year one, lose big, year two, lose small.
Yeah.
Year one is going to lose big.
Yeah, it is. And we should talk about the defense here, too, because the defense was a problem. Also, they lose Roy Lopez, who had a really good season.
He was awesome.
Yeah. And like even when Arizona quit, he didn't. And that was fun to watch because he was a really talented player that got a chance to really prove himself at a Power 5 conference. And even though the rest of his team sucked, he showed why he was a star at New Mexico State. You know, they return Aaron Blackwell. They return some pieces like J.B. Brown is probably Arizona's best NFL prospect. He opted out of the 2020 season. He returns. It's interesting because Jalen Harris was somebody that had a really good freshman year and then just fell off the face of the earth. That's Kylan Wilbur. There's been a couple of them. But Harris was also somebody that had a lot of talent. And it's funny, Don Brown, who's their defensive coordinator, he came over from Michigan. He continuously asks him, how many sacks did you have last year? And the answer is zero. And I just like that. The fact that I think he's doing it because Harris actually has the talent. So he just keeps reminding him, hey, you sucked last year. Let's turn this around. And I think that, and it seems like Harris is actually open to that. You know, if he was really picking on him and it was, you know, if it was in bad with a bad energy, then I think it's different. But I do think it's because he sees the talent that's there. All that to say, I think the defensive line isn't going to be all that good, but at least there's some interesting pieces on that front. They tried to fill in the linebacking core. They got the Mac player of the year as their inside linebacker. But it does make me worried, Rob, that like the second best linebacker is like a guy from Bowling Green that played like that started like 1 year. I think that's probably an issue.
I mean, I would not at all be surprised. I mean, Brown is regardless of the year, the terrible year that Michigan had defensively last year, Brown is a significant get for Arizona. their defense may still be very bad this next year, but like Brown has coached more top 10. More top 10 defenses in the last, you know, like we're talking like 7-8 years than Arizona's had in the last 20, you know, I mean, including, and people will say like, oh, you know, like, I mean, the talent in Michigan, like he coached very, very good defenses at Boston College and UMass. And so I think with Brown, that's a significant X and O upgrade for Arizona. I mean, just like Fish, right? Like, I mean, that's a good get for Arizona, and it was a good get for Fish. But like, and I will also say this, if you asked me, like, I would take this defensive line over where Arizona was 3 years ago.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah. Not last year. I mean, because you have Lopez in the middle just as a I mean, it was a shame that the year that Lopez was there, that Schuler and Tony Fields transferred, because they could have had very good years with Lopez actually eating up blocks for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, Blackwell was serviceable. I like Parrish Shand, a guy that might develop and get some playing time. You know, Trevin Mason's pretty good too. And as you know, I think people are starting to notice him. And I think he's maybe taken a step forward. I mean, the nice thing about having a new staff is for a lot of guys that they have an opportunity to start out over and shine, you know, potentially shine again. They have both Harris brothers now, the former four-star transferred from Colorado to Arizona as well. You know, and so, I mean, some of those guys may end up in Brown's system too, playing, I mean, in the same way that, you know, Drake Jackson is, you know, listed at outside linebacker, he's going to be rushing a lot. You know, I think the same goes perhaps for the Harrises, you know, and if you are Arizona, my real big concern and, you know, here is that I think with Pandy and then the two transfers from the MAC, and you know, one of the Harris brothers on the field, if you are Arizona and you find yourself putting three linebackers, you know, four linebackers on the field, I think you're okay. You don't have as much depth as you'd like, for sure. My concern though is like, man, when you start getting into defensive backs, like it starts getting thin in a hurry. Like, I mean, there's some guys you like, you know, Christian Roland Wallace, you know, and, you know, Mackenzie Barnes has been, and the corners have been surprisingly decent at Arizona for a couple of years. The safeties have been the real, real problem. If you're a nickel, I mean, it gets real thin after Nick. I mean, if you're a nickel or dime.
I absolutely agree with you. I think one of the things is I was reading an article on, you know, and we're alums, so I think we have a pretty good finger on the pulse of the program, although we thought they were going to be a lot better last year. I still thought they'd be like a 500 team, but I didn't think they were going to be like god awful. The interesting is like this one site was basically like, this player had a pretty good season last year, and this player also had a pretty good season. I'm like, no, they didn't. They did not season. It was an awful, awful.
Roy terrible. Lopez had a good season, and that was about it.
They're talking about, you know, there's a walk-on that ended up playing a lot of time at linebacker, and it kind of reminds
bad
me.
Sign.
Yeah, bad sign. It reminds me of the Rich Rod season where, like, that Sir Thomas Jackson was, like, the third leading tackler
best
on the
name.
Team. Yeah, it's best name. And it was like, wow, Sir Thomas Jackson had, like, 75 tackles. He must be really good. And then Rich Rod finally started recruiting the position. He was, like, never seen again. And it kind of reminds me of Arizona's, you know, basically what they were running out by the end of the year. The one thing I want to give him credit for is, you know, you mentioned that Fish probably could have done a better job bringing in a quarterback from the transfer portal. He did really try to fill as many holes as possible on the defense. So we already mentioned the MAC linebackers. He brought in a cornerback named Isaiah Rutherford, who is a really highly recruited cornerback who is at Notre Dame. He's going to likely start at the second spot across from Christian Roland Wallace. They brought in some Northwestern players. And I mean, look, like they're going to lose a lot. But given all the crap that got dumped in his lap, I think this is about as good as Arizona fans can expect from a first year, which likely means probably going, maybe winning one or two conference games max. But, you know, but it is what it is. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not, I mean, it's really going to be on Fish to recruit this coming year. And if he's able to pull in some talent and coach him up, then maybe Arizona can claw back its way to, you know, the middle of the pack. But I think it's going to take a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I mean, Rutherford, you know, the transfer from Notre Dame, he's been, you know, pretty well liked for what he's playing camp. You know, Mackenzie Barnes, Malik Hausman are good. You know, it's going to be like Christian Roland Wallace. But I mean, if you look right now, I mean, they really, you're talking about like guys that are coming in the class that they just signed, you know, as freshmen are likely going to have to be in the depth on the two deep, because right now for spring, they have five guys listed corner right now.
I was listening to Michael Lev, and he was, and Lev was a former beat writer for USC who now covers Arizona. I mean, he really does know football. He's very good. And it was funny because he's like, I don't know, this walk on Jaden Young might be able to back up our free safety. I'm like, oh no,
no. But that's really too been like, I mean, a major, you know, this goes back to the coaching that, I mean, when Marcel Yates was coaching the safeties, I mean, they just really struggle. Are they the linebackers and safeties have struggled in coverage, for Arizona. And so, you know, I do like that they're getting Gunnar Maldonado in from Northwestern. That's a very, very good, well-coached defense that they run at Northwestern. So him having some experience there is a big one. But I mean, it's true that, I mean, like they're, you know, Don Brown, I mean, his nickname is Dr. Blitz. I mean, his favorite catchphrase is, you know, solve your problems with aggression. So I don't expect him to sit back and just let teams beat him. I mean, that's going to put Arizona's corners and safeties and linebackers in a position where they're going to have to cover, right? And they're going to have to do well at it. So, I don't know that that's, I mean, I expect Arizona to give up a lot of big plays as a result. Now, on the bright side, if you're an Arizona fan, maybe you're hoping that you also can generate some big plays with the blitzing defense. But I expect this season their explosive drives number to be pretty bad.
Yeah, get them while you can get them, those points on Arizona. I think they're going to boost a lot of people's numbers this year. But you always know that it's pretty rough when you don't have the talent and you're relying on pressuring the quarterback with a ton of blitzes in order to stay competitive in the game.
Yeah.
Like, because that is high risk and depending on the talent, it could be a low reward also. So you never know what you're going to get there. Anything else in Arizona here, Rob, before we head out?
No, I mean, if you're an Arizona fan, like just hope Fish, you know, like keeps the sunny, you know, keep a sunny side up, hope for, you know, one or two upsets this season. And, you know, like hope that the team shows some progress. I think what will make this season feel really long if you're an Arizona fan, is if the offensive line continues to be a problem and no one really emerges at QB.
Yeah, that would be the worst.
that would be very hard to watch. And I mean, like I said, I think Fish is a really smart offensive play caller. He's been around some really great offensive minds, too. I don't know. The best drawn plays in the world aren't going to work because the quarterback, if he's not getting through his reads quickly, this offensive line's not going to hold, right? Like, and the quarterback, I mean, you can win with a middling offensive line if your quarterback makes his reads, right? Like Joe, that LSU offensive line was really good. Joe Burrow just made his reads lightning fast, right? So like, that's what allowed LSU to basically play zero protection and send everybody out on a route, was because Burrow was so good at his reads. That's what concerns me with these Arizona QBs. I just kind of worry that they're all going to hold the ball and the offensive line stinks.
And then it's a spiral, right? Because the offense doesn't get points and the defense is on the field and the defense isn't very good and the offense comes back and they're 3-and-out and the defense, and anyway, it's a total mess. Well, let's leave it on that happy note here, Rob. I heard that there were some electronic issues over at Sharp College Football. Are you back up and
they're
running?
Fixed.
Or what's going on?
Oh my gosh, it turned out to be a driver issue. Like, talk about of all the things that makes your preamp, you know, like not function and just have dropouts. Like, what a pain.
So are you back up doing videos?
Yeah, I have to redo Iowa and Washington because the audio is unsalvageable with the dropouts, which is okay. I mean, I'll knock them out. So I will try to re-record Washington tonight and then probably do Iowa tomorrow and then do Cincinnati. And then we'll have 20 videos in. We will be 20 videos deep into the college football preview already.
Yeah, and keep a lookout for some articles too. We're going to start doing a little bit more written content. We've been doing a lot of video. I hate the word content. I'm going to get that out of my head. We're going to do video and audio and some of the written stuff. I think sometimes when you can just see the numbers in front of you, it's often helpful. And we'll probably start with some of the best teams so you can just get a feel for what we have to look forward to. One of the things I wish I would have done was write extensively about LSU's offense because it was freaking awesome a couple of years ago, and just see what that was. And Alabama's offense this past year, we might start with Bama and kind of go through some of those numbers, because what Sarkisian was able to do there was quite impressive. All right. Well, hey, let's end it there, Rob. Thanks everybody for listening. Where can the fine people follow you, Rob, before we get out of here?
You can find me at BetaRankFB or at Sharp College Football.
All right. And we will catch everybody next week. We'll go into the North. And what do you want to do in the North here, Rob?
Well, we haven't been doing them in pods. So do you want to do Cal? Let's do Cal. I'm interested in what we've got with the Bears. And then,
Let's do one where there's actually writers covering the team.
Cal's impossible. Like, finding beat writers, even for like the San Francisco Chronicle, is like impossible. They're the worst. I end up reading like the Cal student newspaper.
I know, it's been pretty rough. And then there's that one like Cal writer that got really mad at us. Let's definitely do Cal, but let's do, you want to do Washington or Oregon? Because I know there's people writing there. I mean, there's been a lot of coverage on their spring stuff.
And I've previewed them both. I mean, let's do Washington. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then that'll be fresh on our minds anyway. All right. Washington and Cal. We'll talk about questions. We'll touch a little bit on the depth charts as we head towards spring. And thanks everybody for tuning in, and we will catch you next.